Going to read this morning from Canto 3, chapter 6, text number 4. And the title of the chapter is Creation of the Universal Form. And if you're like me, the universal form is this very elusive, enigmatic topic. But it's made easier or a little more clear in this chapter for my capacity to understand creation of the universal form. The person that's speaking is Maitreya, and the person that's hearing from him is Vidura. And both of them are super elevated personalities. Maitreya has just heard from Krishna directly. So this is disciplic succession happening here. He heard from Krishna as Krishna was speaking to Uddhava, Uddhava Gita. He was there. And Krishna gave him an assignment before he left this world. His pastimes were completed, and he said, Vidura, by Krishna's arrangement, is soon going to come here in this area, and I'd like you to instruct him everything that you heard. And what he heard, according to what Vidura in his questions, so when Vidura comes before Maitreya, he wants to hear. We mentioned it yesterday. Karmam Stitim, and it's a phrase that's repeated as a refrain again and again, going back to chapters 4 and 5. This is chapter 6. The chapter sloki verses, as Krishna explained it to Brahma. Krishna explained it, or Vishnu explained to Brahma. Krishna explained to Uddhava. But the way that Krishna explained it to Uddhava, because Uddhava is so eminently qualified, in addition to the essence that Brahma received, there's a dimension that's filled with rasa. It's the relationships of love between Krishna and the residents of Dwarka, and Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. So the chapter sloki verses with the essence of loving relationships. That's what Uddhava received. Maitreya is being asked by Vidura to explain it. He doesn't just put it in that language. He begins his questions about the loving transaction between the Lord and his devotee, or the Lord is part and parcel of the entity. He asks about creation, which Maitreya explains and is continuing to explain. But in the act of creation, very important, Maitreya's explanation says the Lord, the personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, his plenary expansion, who is complete, who is fully independent, who is self-satisfied, Atmarama, has a feeling that something's incomplete. I'm not satisfied. It's puzzling. But the feeling is because there are living entities that have turned away from me, and they're unhappy because of that. And this is during the dormant state, the avyakta state, the unmanifest state. The whole shebang, the whole cosmos, everything is in a unmanifest state. And eternal time which doesn't have past, present, and future, eternal time, starts acting because of the desire of the Supreme Lord to provide an opportunity for those living entities that are unfortunately forgetful of Him to become again mindful of Him. It's love. It's not the same as the love of residents of Vrindavan or Dwarka. It's another kind of love, because Aham Bija Pratak Bita, He's the father of all living entities. And so even the rebellious ones, they're His living entities. They're His sons. Good sons and bad sons. But they're His sons. And He has love for them. With that desire, because the Lord is not a stone, He's fully satisfied in Himself, He's Atma Rama, but that doesn't mean He has no desire. He just has no material desire. There's no something separate from Him. That's what material desire is. Seeing something material means, simple definition, material means seeing things apart from the Lord. Spiritual means things in relation to the Lord. Very simple definition. And there's no material desire, because there's nothing separate from Him. But His external energy is dormant. The living entities are in a dormant state. They're still conscious. There are, the Vedas describe three states of consciousness: awake, sleep, and deep sleep. So it's in the deep sleep state, susupti. And that's not just asleep, like, you know, we'll go to sleep at night, but asleep like when you're anesthetized, or at the time of death, when the living entity is in that susupti state until some number of months, 7 months within the womb, and then conscious, external conscious. But conscious because your soul, part and parcel of Krishna. That is the initial cause of creation. The love, compassionate love of the personality of Godhead. And then things start to move. The time energy is one of the principal agents of things moving. Because without time, you don't have anything material. And it's another mystery, because time is eternal. Time isn't relative. Time is eternal. But it appears to be relative because of our proportionate to our covered state of consciousness. Relative time is a reciprocation with the living entity who wants to enjoy and has the guna and karma to enjoy according to whatever their capacity is, and time acts according to their capacity, according to their consciousness. Meaning, like an insect, or a human, or a demigod, Lord Brahma. And so time acts in a different way, according to guna and karma, according to their qualification and consciousness. So, it describes earlier chapters, really quick gloss, the glance of the Supreme Lord over Pradhan, the sum total of material energy. And Pradhan is His energy. It's in the language of Brahma Samhita, Chaya Devi, the reflection of His own internal potency, Rama Devi. So Chaya Devi, the reflection, has nothing to do. And He knows that she wants something to do, so He gives her something to do. She's very busy keeping the living entities fully occupied in illusion. And by that, keeping them away from her master, Lord Vishnu. That's her spirit. That's her motivation. They're not fit to be in his vicinity, so she keeps them far away. And she's under the Lord's direction. She's infallible. Oh. By the glancing over Pradhan, the Mahatattva arises, which is but a transformation of the undifferentiated to the differentiated states of matter. And the first element that differentiates out or separates out is our dear friend, false ego. Our dearmost friend, the closest thing to the soul, false ego. The modes are also dormant in the unmanifest state. The modes become activated in the manifest state. So there's false ego and good dispassion and ignorance. And according to, this isn't detailed here in the third, earlier part of the third canto, later is detailed in Kapila Dev's teachings. But the elements start to separate out according to false ego. In goodness, the intelligence. False ego in passion, the mind. False ego in ignorance, the five gross elements, and then the five knowledge acquiring, the five objects of senses, five knowledge acquiring senses, five working senses. And then the sum total of the material elements, the balance, the big warehouse. 24. And with them, the demigods that are to be the controllers of them, because they're needed. You're going to have a creation, you've got to have people that look after it, make the elements do what they do. Like Prabhupada said in a very simple way, you can't even blink your eyelid, which is an involuntary act. You can't digest your food, which is an involuntary act, etc., without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. And the sanction of the Supreme Lord is under the direction of some demigod. Agni, fire, you know, feel fire, but there's fire, and that fire digests food, and if the fire is weak, you can't digest your food. If you can't digest your food, you got a problem. According to Ayurveda, it's the root of illness, not proper digestion of food. So they're demigods. And I'm going to read a little bit, but the demigods in chapter 5, there's 15-20 verses where they're praying to the Supreme Lord for the capacity to do their service, because they're not feeling capable to do their service. I'll read. The controlling deities of all the above mentioned physical elements are empowered expansions of Lord Vishnu. They are embodied by eternal time. Eternal time. They're not experiencing eternal time. They're experiencing demigod time. But it's eternal time. They are embodied by eternal time under the external energy, and they are his parts and parcels. Because they were entrusted with different functions of universal duties, and were unable to perform them, they looked at their task and they went, oh my God, how am I going to do this? I don't feel the strength, I don't feel the capacity, I don't have the intelligence. Imagine you had to be in charge of wind or rain, or, you know, how am I going to do this? They offered fascinating prayers to the Lord as follows, and their prayers are presented, and the last of the prayers is, O Supreme Self, please give us, who are created in the beginning from the Mahatattva, the total cosmic energy, your kind directions, intelligence, form direction of the Lord is intelligence. Form hyphen direction. Prabhupada gives that definition in the second canto. Form direction of the Lord. Please give us your kind directions and how we shall act. Kindly award us your perfect knowledge and potency so that we can render you service in the different departments of subsequent creation. Sarga, visarga. You're familiar with those terms. Those are two of the 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam. Sarga is what Vishnu does, visarga is what Brahma does. Vishnu sets the whole thing up, and Brahma puts it all together. He's the chief engineer. He's not just civil engineer, he's got all of them. He's Dr. Brahma with many PhDs. He's the department head of all those engineering departments. He's the chief. Under him, there's demigods that maintain, they minister the visarga. So that's the subsequent creation. So that ends chapter 5. And what we're headed for is chapter 6, creation of the universal form. So, here's the scene. We have all these elements. It's still not put together in a universe. We have all the elements. We have the demigods. They're rubbing their hands together, ready to go, feeling, whoa, how do I do this? They're dependent. And they know that they're dependent. It's good to know that we're dependent. It's good to feel dependent upon. It's good to be in touch with reality. They want to do their service. We may find ourselves sometimes where we're feeling a little overwhelmed with, you know, how are we going to do this daunting service that's been given to us? So they pray to the Supreme Lord. Text 1, the Rishi Maitreya said, the Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahatattva. Now, I'll just comment again. This, we're already in the Visarga. Sarga is done. Now it's the sub-creation. And the sub-creation doesn't just happen automatically because it got stuck. There's a... In medieval Europe, there was for some period of time a fascination with machines, and one of those machines was clocks. So the Germans were really good, and the Swiss were really good making clocks. They're fascinated by it. And to this day, they're, you know, Swiss watches, it's a big deal. So as they were making clocks and fascinated with cause and effect of this causes that, causes that, causes that, you know, the cuckoo clock, and anyway, the whole thing. It's just a series of gears and levers, and so they extrapolated, and these, you know, the intellectuals, and thought about God, that the world was like a clock. God creates it, someone takes it home, and that's it. He doesn't have anything to do with the clock anymore. I forget which of the two. One is called deism, the other is theism. I think deism is God is like the clockmaker. And then theism says there's an ongoing, after he makes the clock, there's an ongoing involvement with the clock. And deism was, whichever the right term is, deism was popular because they were fascinated. And so it became like that. At least, you know, the connection with religion was very strong. The intellectuals were priests. The priests were intellectuals. The intellectuals were priests. People that had the capacity, they were knowledgeable of the scripture. But, you know, without Vedic wisdom, they had to speculate a lot. And I like to speculate a lot. They came up with this idea, and they came up with that idea. And then the modern sense of science, which is our would-be Brahmins, have become scientists, that God just disappears. You don't even need a watchmaker. The clock comes into being just because there's laws of nature, and the laws of nature by chance produce clocks. That's their brilliant deduction. Because they're fascinated by studying the push and pull, and they're convinced that if you just study the push and pull, the cause and effect, enough, you can find out that, you know, behind the creation there isn't anything. There's just the laws of nature and matter that's governed by the laws of nature. That's it. Mechanistic science. There isn't something else. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us differently. Even when you have the physical elements, so where's the laws of nature come from? And where does nature come from? Where do the elements come from? Well, they're eternal. You speak of God, we say nature is eternal. That's God. Where does God come from? Your answer is God doesn't come from anything. God is eternal. We say the same thing about nature. The elements are eternal. And the laws governing them, they're eternal. They're just laws of nature. Don't ask me where matter came from. It's eternal. Any more than where did God come from? That's their position. And there's the laws governing, and that's it. And everything can be explained on that basis. We don't need God in the picture. The demigods understood differently. They were there, the elements were there, they had their service to do, but they didn't have the capacity. So, text 2, the supreme powerful Lord then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements with the goddess Kali, his external energy, who alone amalgamates all the different elements. I've already discussed this, so I'm not going to spend time just on this verse, but the Sanskrit is Kala Sangyam, known as Kali. That's how Prabhupada has translated it. Kala we know is time. Kali is the goddess. Kala is time, and Kali is the external energy. And a particular feature of the external energy at that, because the external energy has different names, or is addressed by different names according to what, you know, that aspect of the external energy. So goddess Kali, she's destructive. She's got her trident. She brings threefold miseries. You better watch out when goddess Kali comes around. So some persons worship goddess Kali because they don't want to be on the bad side. They want to be on the good side. So they worship her. But God is Kali here in the stead. It's almost interchangeable. And that is time. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, time I am, the destroyer of all things. But he does so, Krishna destroys things through the agency of others, like God is Kali. Or in Sri Brahma Samhita, Shristi Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Rekha Chaye Vayasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga. Durga is attributed in Brahma Samhita for Shristi, creation, Stiti, maintenance, and Pralaya, destruction, devastation. All three, Shristi, Stiti, and Pralaya, creation, maintenance, and destruction. That's what time does. Time brings things, time maintains things, time destroys things. So, another terminology is Kalasangyam, known as Kali. So Krishna enters these elements, 23, notice it's not 24, Prabhupada lists them, and the one that's missing is intelligence, because they don't know what to do. Going back in chapter 5, the Mahatattva is said to be the some language like, it's important to get the exact language, but some language like total consciousness. And the expression is total consciousness because the Supreme Consciousness, capital S, capital C, the personality of Godhead, is present, and therefore doing the bidding of the Supreme Consciousness, Mahatattva, is energized as if conscious but acts as matter. But anyway, it's a little subtle, more than a little subtle, it's a little confusing, because matter is not conscious. But by the presence of spirit soul, like this body, there's a soul within this body, each of our bodies. So we're conscious of things according to our sense perception, something we can feel and hear the train going by, and you know the sound in the kitchen, and we, you know, hear, smell, taste. But it's the soul. It's because the conscious soul is present that the senses are activated. So it's not that the matter is conscious, but matter acts because of the presence of the Supreme Soul as if conscious. So here's Prabhupada listed the 23 ingredients. He says all are combined together by the influence of time, and again dissolved in the course of time. So the time energy is doing all this. Time, therefore, is the energy of the Lord and acts in her, feminine, Shaktiman and Shakti. They're inseparable. The possessor of energy and the energy, the time energy, is acting in her own way by the direction of the Lord. Then this energy is called Kali and is represented by the dark, destructive goddess, generally worshipped by persons influenced by the mode of darkness or ignorance in material existence. Kali worship is a little different but similar to Durga worship. And Durga worship is just, it's very well known, popular in Bengal. Durga Puja is a big festival. Don't try to go to Mayapur during Durga Puja season. You won't get there. It takes, I did that once without knowing, and it took so many hours because of all the stuff, activity that's going on. People come up to the bus and, or the car, and they're demanding money or your life to do their Durga Puja. Then you go to the next little place and same thing. I get it. That's okay. You got to get here too. Or they get in front of your car and you can't move. It's robbery. But it goes on. Anyway, Durga Puja. And Navaratri in other parts of India. It's the same. It's Shakti worship that's not recognizing Shaktiman. So the Bhagavatam here is speaking about the role of Shakti, but Shakti doesn't, Kala or Kali doesn't do anything apart from the interest of the Supreme Lord, that she's the servant of her master. Prabhupada gives a Vedic hymn that says the following in English. The energy which acts as material nature in a combination of 23 ingredients is not the final source of creation. The Lord enters into the elements and applies his energy. The elements are dull matter. They're not conscious. But the Lord enters the elements along with his energy, Kali. So this is the Supreme Lord in a specific aspect. Just like the glance of Mahavishnu. Let's go back. Prabhupada taught very simply. Vishnu never contacts material nature. So when the incarnations of the Lord appear, they're not fazed by material nature. They're not contaminated by material nature. They're not influenced by material nature. They're under the control. They're controlling material nature. So how can they be under the control of the material nature? But for the purpose of creation, there's the glance. And the glance of the Supreme Lord is none different than the Supreme Lord, because he's absolute. But the glance contacts material nature. So the glance has a particular name, Shambhu. Read Brahma Samhita carefully, you'll see it there. Shambhu is the glance of the Supreme Lord which contacts Pradhan or Chayadevi. And like milk that's in touch, this is in Brahma Samhita, milk that's in touch with a souring agent becomes curd. The colloidal suspension separates and curd and whey separate. So Shambhu is compared to curd, which is nothing other than a milk product, but you can't say that milk and yogurt are the same, although yogurt is nothing but a milk product. Similarly, Shambhu, or Lord Shiva, who contacts material nature, Prakriti, is like milk in touching with a souring agent and becomes curd. And there's a verse in Brahma Samhita that says that. And therefore the energy name that's spoken here is Kali. That's the external energy. And the Supreme Lord doesn't contact the external energy. His expansion, Shambhu, contacts the external energy by his glance. So now we have the Supreme Lord and his external energy. Prabhupada quotes next in that purport two verses. One is a Brahma Samhita verse, Eko kisara chayatam jagadanda kotim yach chakti asti jagadanda chayaya dantaha andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is the original personality of Godhead. By his partial plenary expansion, Mahavishnu, he enters into material nature. Of course, he's not touched by it, and it does not touch him. And then into each and every universe, as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then as Shiradakshaya Vishnu, into all the elements. Into all the elements, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, including every atom of matter. So now the elements are inert, but they're being energized by the presence of Shiradakshaya Vishnu, and the external energy of the Lord, sometimes spoken of as time, eternal time, and sometimes here being spoken of as Kali. We're just waiting for the universal form to appear, about to appear. And Prabhupada then also quotes 10:42 Bhagavad Gita, Ekam Senas Tato Jagat, the whole verse is quoted. O Arjuna, there's no necessity of your knowing about my innumerable energies which act in various ways. I enter into the material creation by my partial plenary expansion, Paramatma or Supersoul, in all the universes and in all the elements thereof. And thus, the work of creation goes on. Now, Prabhupada modified the translation from what you'll find in Bhagavad Gita, but that's the translation he's given here. And the last, the wonderful activities of material nature are due to Lord Krishna, thus he is the final cause or the ultimate cause of all causes. So, that's the punchline. All of this is to help us understand that. Now, step back, let her get a little oxygen to the brain and to what's going on here. We're dealing in modern times with mechanistic science, and people have great faith, practically blind faith. Look of the wonderful things that science has done. These guys are good, and it's just technology, largely. Scientists practically are used interchangeably with, you know, the research scientists. They're researching the push and pull, and they come up with something. You wiggle this over here, and that wiggles over there. Okay, you get a PhD. And you get this scientist collaborating with that scientist. Not only this wiggles and that wiggles over there, but there's, and then we can put those two things together and do something, make a product out there, and, you know, improve the quality of life. At least make some money. So those folks in the atmosphere in which we are today, you don't need God. You just wiggle this over there and that wiggles over there. We have all this nice theory that says, you know, there's originally just this wiggle. We call it a big bang. And stuff went all over the place. And then you wiggle this and that happens, and you don't need God. We don't need God. We're the scientists. We can tell you. You don't need God. And that's the atmosphere in which we live. And so we say, no. God created everything. They go, come on. So the Bhagavatam here is helping us confront or deal with, at least not be on quicksand, where we can say firm ground. There's a there's a person behind creation. Matter doesn't create on its own. Okay, tell me how it happened. Here's how it happened. Oh, come on. You believe all that fairy tale mythology? But it's scientific. It's scientific in the sense that as scientific as their science. There's the push and the pull, and matter doesn't move without the touch of spirit. The Prabhupada takes in the purport what living entities do, and they're in this process, they're in the dormant state because there isn't creation. So the purpose of creation is to give those conditioned souls again another chance to rectify that attitude, averse to the Supreme Lord attitude that they have. They're given a chance to take advantage of Vedic wisdom and find out what their relationship with the Supreme Lord is, how they can be liberated, and what is the ultimate profit in such liberation. By properly studying the Vedas, one becomes conscious of his position and thus takes to transcendental devotional service of the Lord and is gradually promoted to the spiritual sky. That's a nice, happy picture. However, it didn't happen yet because they're still dormant within the body of the Supreme Lord. So he has to make that arrangement. The individual souls in the material world engage in different activities according to their past unfinished desires. After the dissolution of a particular body, the individual soul forgets everything, but the all-merciful Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart as the witness, the super soul, awakens him. This is in a given birth. He awakens him and reminds him of his past desires, and thus he begins to act accordingly in his next life. This unseen guidance is described as fate. And a sensible man can understand that this continues his material bondage in the three modes of nature. The unseen hand, or fate. The unconscious, sleeping state of the living entity just after the partial or total dissolution of the creation is wrongly accepted as the final stage of life by some less intelligent philosophers, because the soul may not have a body and consciousness may be in this deep sleep state, but super soul is there, and as the time energy moves, tick-tock, 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 and then becomes time to wake up, and super soul provides the body and does the whole thing. The soul is impregnated again in the field of the material energy and time energy and the modes of nature and karma. They all become activated, and here's all these elements, the demigods, to assist in directing the movements of the elements, and the body is provided. And then again, oh yeah, that was my desire. Because the Supreme Lord prompts them to again remember. Okay, so now we're up to the verses that I wanted to cover. Let's just review. Text 4. When the 23 principal elements were set in action by the will of the Supreme, here comes the Viratrupa. The gigantic universal form, or the Vishwarupa body of the Lord, came into existence. Short purport. The Virat Rupa or Vishva Rupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, which is very much appreciated by the impersonalist, is not an eternal form of the Lord. It is manifested by the supreme will of the Lord after the ingredients of material creation. Krishna showed it to Arjuna to convince him that he's not one of us. Krishna exhibited the Virat Rupa. It is not that Krishna was exhibited by the Virat Rupa. The Virat Rupa is not, therefore, an eternal form of the Lord exhibited in the spiritual sky. It is a material manifestation of the Lord. Listen to this. The Archa Vigraha, or the worshipable deity in the temple, is a similar manifestation of the Lord for the neophytes. But in spite of their material touch, such forms of the Lord as the Virat and Archa are all non-different from his eternal form as Lord Krishna. In fact, they act. The deity form is non-different. And the deity form acts in a fully spiritual way. But if we see the deity form in a material way, the deity form remains material to our eyes and to our experience. But if we see the deity form under the authority of the Vedas, and if the worship of the deity is according to the authority of the Vedas, and there's sincerity behind our worship, the Lord receives, the Lord reciprocates, the Lord will speak to us and interact with us. There's a relationship. And those that worship deities know that that's a fact. There is affection, an exchange of affection, an attachment, an exchange of attachment. Like Chakshi Gopal, for example, that nice description in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Last verse. As the Lord, in his plenary portion, entered into the elements of the universal creation, they transformed, the elements, they transformed into the gigantic form in which all the planetary systems and all the movable and immovable creations rest. It's the Virat Rupa is subtle. And the elements rest in that Virat Rupa. And so the Virat Rupa is then described. His head is this, his arms are this, and so forth. Virat Rupa is the resting place, the pratishtha, the basis of the creation. It's said in when Brahma begins each morning of his life, 100-year-long life, he has to again recreate the portion that's been partially dissolved. In his meditation upon Krishna, the universal form, the blueprint basically, the Virat Rupa is envisioned by him, and so now he knows how to do and put everything back together again. Because it's the subtle basis of his engineering work. And the Lord gives that plan. The Lord gives the plan, and Brahma does the work. But Brahma can't do the work, not only without the plan, but without the creative potency of the Supreme Lord to do it. And the demigods don't have the potency to do their service, although they're charged with the service, and they're service-minded, but they don't have the capacity without the Supreme Lord giving them the capacity. That's what's being described here. So the Supreme Lord enters, along with his Kala, or his external energy, Kali, the time energy that's eternal, manifest in its relative aspect, the destructive potency of time, and that destructive potency also helps bring things together. The destruction of the unmanifest brings the manifest. And the destruction of the manifest brings again the unmanifest, or the continual changes that come about by time. Just like we're sitting here in this nice house. After passage of time, this nice house is going to be gone. Tick, tick. Tick, tick. We're not perceiving it. It looks fine. However long, tick, tick. Tick, tick. It's gone. How many tick ticks? How long will it take? And they'll give you an estimate. Oh, this building should stand for... And then you have to do a whole bunch of any of the whole thing. So, creation, maintenance, destruction through the agency of time. We'll do it one more time. That time is present with the Supreme Lord, so that the demigods, who are the controlling agents of the whole shebang, the whole show, they are thus empowered with the intelligence and the strength, the capacity to do what they have to do. For that to happen, once that is all in place, this Virat Rupa is manifested, which is a temporary form, and it's the resting place of these now energized elements. Both the planets and the beings that inhabit the planets, immediately there's beings and immediately there's planets, but the plan for it, because that's what the demigods wanted. We want the intelligence, we want the strength. So the Virat Rup manifesting is for that purpose. Here's the plan, here's the strength. Because I'm now present as Paramatma within the elements and within your heart. Prabhupada writes, just quickly, the elements of the cosmic creation are all matter and have no potency to increase in volume unless entered into by the Lord in its plenary portion. This means, he said it three times, matter does not increase or decrease unless it is spiritually touched. And he says it again. Matter is a product of spirit and increases only by the touch of spirit. In case you didn't get it the first time, there it is three times. Matter doesn't move. Matter doesn't increase. You know, the universe is expanding. The Vedas say it, the mundane scientists say it. The universe is expanding. The universe doesn't expand on its own. There's the touch of spirit. It's sensible. It's for a devotee. And to the scientist, it's, you know, you don't need touch of spirit. It expands. Laws of nature. The entire cosmic manifestation has not assumed its gigantic form by itself, as wrongly calculated by less intelligent persons. As long as spirit is within matter, matter can increase as needed. But without the spirit, matter stops increasing. There it is the fourth time. And it gives the example of a body. It grows as long as there's a soul. And when the soul is gone, it doesn't grow. In fact, it disintegrates. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, importance is given to the spiritual consciousness, not the body. The entire cosmic body increased by the same process that we experience in our small bodies. One should not, however, foolishly think that the individual, infinitesimal soul is the cause of the gigantic manifestation of the universal form. Universal form is called the Virat Rupa. because the Supreme Lord is within in his plenary portion. To be continued. Any discussion? No. It's good for the morning. This won't work in the evening. The kids will go nuts. Yes.
You mentioned that there is Sarga and Visarga.
Yes.
And then we all, it's also said that time creates, maintains, and annihilates.
Yes.
So is it like separate from Visarga?
No. No. It's how the Lord does it. He has agencies, he has potencies, unlimited potencies. That help?
So then Lord Brahma is doing something, and then
Everybody's doing something. We're doing something too. We're creating or destroying something. So it's by the potency of the Supreme Lord, one of which is time. It's given by the Lord, so we take it as given. But it's an energy of the Supreme Lord, without which we can't do. Okay? Yes?
It's like for a single universe, or it's like for all the universes?
Good question. From the descriptions of Virat Rupa, it sounds like each universe has its Virat Rupa, because Virat Rupa is described, you know, the parts of the Virat Rupa. It's the form of the universe. And there's so many universes. There's so many Virat Rupas. Let's do this though. So many Virat Rupas, but one Virat Rupa. Like, how many of us are here? However many of us are here, so many super souls, Paramatmas. But how many Paramatmas are there? There's only one. Variously manifest. And given this description, the Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, who is the soul of the universe, as Jivatma is the soul of this body within whom is Paramatma. How many Garbhodakshayi Vishnus are there? As many as there are universes, but it's one Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. So perhaps it's conceptually correct, and something like that. There are so many Paramatmas, but one Paramatma. So many universes, so many Virat Rupas, but one Virat Rupa. I've not heard that very interesting question asked. So it seems to me it could be explained either way. As many universes as there are, there are that many Virat Rupas. At the same time, one Virat Rupa. Yes?
Like some service, when we are given some service, we try to, at least I try to be doing it with some determination, but I get lost in that. I was just thinking, like they say that Krishna's plan is also there in that, but I just tend to go so deep in that, like I try to do only my plan. So how do I know like Krishna's plan?
By being Krishna conscious. That is, by your sincere endeavor, not just to do according to your plan, but your plan is to match Krishna's happiness, Krishna's pleasure. What's separating us is our contaminations, are impurities. And as those impurities become reduced, our plan is more approximate to Krishna's plan, because Krishna is within our heart, giving us intelligence. Do it like this. So the basics, like deity worship and things that there's no speculation at all involved, what's Krishna's plan, you just follow it with full heart. And yeah, all lights are on. Full intelligence, mind, everything absorbed, things that are very clear. And then there's the creative part of the day, where what's Krishna's plan? You do the best you can with the mood of pleasing Krishna. And Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, you use your senses to please or serve the master of the senses. That's Krishna consciousness. And as you cultivate that, as that Krishna consciousness grows, as that seed grows into a mature stage, Krishna's plan is what's going to happen. Because Krishna will directly take charge of the activities of the mind and senses. We're not there. But you cultivate according to this principle of bhakti. Let me, as best as I can, do this nicely for Krishna, whatever that, so many services we do.
How time devours everything.
Time evolves and devolves.
Yeah, and it consumes everything. That's yeah. Really, so, at least for me, like when I think of that, and I always feel like it kind of brings a disinterest in some of the things. Like,
even having, is it on? Yes? Okay.
It brings a disinterest in some of the things that I do, even like my regular duties.
Why?
Because I'm kind of thinking, okay, anyway, I mean, it's going to like devour everything. And
that's okay. The essence is not, you don't have the capacity to create something permanent. That's not your prerogative. But you have the capacity to engage in service to Krishna. That's what's important. Not permanence, impermanence. Service to Krishna. That service to Krishna is permanent. The fruit may not be, but the service to Krishna is permanent. As eternal as the soul is. As eternal as Krishna is. The devotional service is permanent. It's eternal. But do for that reason. That's the driving force. And then the disinterest is to become the enjoyer in the sense of, yay, I did it. The doership, the subtle enjoyment. It's service. So there's no disinterest when it comes to service. There's full interest because it's for Krishna. The other is in contamination of impersonalism. If I can't control that and enjoy it, I'm not interested. Knowledge of the impermanence may bear frustration. It's meaningless. So I don't care. That's meaningful in the sense that it's for Krishna. It's full of meaning. If it doesn't have anything to do with Krishna's service, I'm not interested. But if it has something to do with Krishna's service, I'm interested. So I may not have full capacity to see what something has in relation to Krishna's service. So therefore we need guidance of scripture and the example of acharyas and things like that. is this connected to Krishna's service or not? And if it's connected, I may not have the full realization, but it's connected to Krishna's service, and so I'm interested. Like her question. I've got my plan. What's Krishna's plan? But at least, you know, if the area of service, whatever her duties may be, or your duties may be, if it's under the umbrella of, I've got this human body, and I have some responsibility to use it properly in Krishna's service. That's important. The body is temporary, and if what comes from the work that you do with this body is temporary, the fruit, the devotional service is permanent.
Yeah.